During the Switch, Pivot, or Quit chat, we talk to women that have successfully navigated through some of the plot twist years of life and are eager to share their stories and what they've learned in the hopes of inspiring, teaching, or making even the slightest impact by candidly owning their truth. Hey girl, hey, and thanks for dropping in to the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. Candid convo for the girl needing a lifestyle plot twist when she's deciding if it's time to switch, pivot, or quit. I'm Ayana Angel, a former sports entertainment publicist in New York City, turned traditionally published author with Simon & Schuster, who quit my old life to write a book, live in London for a bit, and explore my dreams to find my happiness and fulfillment. I'm here to help encourage and guide you through your plot twist years as your chief encourager and host of the Switch, Pivot, or Quit podcast. On today's show, we have a Switch, Pivot, or Quit chat with Dana Blair, who is an on-air personality, entrepreneur, founder of IHaveNeverBeenThatGirl.com, and soon-to-be nomad world traveler. Welcome, Dana.
Thank you. That sounded real good. I need to have that as my intro. I was like, ooh, that's me.
Exactly.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, me. Yes.
Yes, me. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're chatting with Dana today about her upcoming participation in the Remote Year program, where professionals spend a year on the move living in 12 cities around the world over the course of 12 months. And if immediately your eyes started to sparkle at the thought of escaping the desk that you're sitting at right now listening to this podcast, then head over to their website, remoteyear.com, to learn more and see if it might just be something for you. We don't know. But we do know. Yeah, you never know. We do know that for Dana, this is where she's going with it. Now, girl, the last time we chatted offline, you were talking about a move, but it was still in the United States. So this is a huge move. How would you describe life right now in one word?
Exciting. Yes, it's exciting. I mean, exciting doesn't mean it's not scary. Exciting doesn't mean it's not intimidating. It just means it's exciting. I feel like I'm living my life on my own terms now.
I could totally feel that energy from everything that we've been witnessing thus far on your social media. And if you're not following Dana Blair, just Dana Blair on Instagram, to go ahead and catch up and check her out while you're listening to this interview. So Dana, you're no stranger to making a switch, pivoting, or quitting, as you went from being heavily in the premier dance world to a career in marketing, and most recently, you are an on-air personality and entrepreneur. Would you say that you're comfortable with change?
I would say that after you make a major change the first time, making a change any other time is easy. When I transitioned from dance into business and marketing, I had an injury, and going through that injury and just kind of reassessing some other things in my life and just kind of reassessing life in general is when I first made my change from dance to go back to school to get my MBA in marketing, which was scary for me because I've been dancing since I was 3 years old. Mm-hmm. My mom put me in dance class because I was hyperactive, and she's like, you got to get up out of my house. You can't be up in here.
Right. You need something to do.
Yeah. You're going to break something. Get out. So that was scary for me because I was always known as Dana the Dancer, Dana the Dancer. And whenever you go home, like my hometown of Alexandria, people ask you, why aren't you still dancing anymore? Do you still dance? They constantly ask you and remind you of what you quote unquote once were. So that was scary at first. But after you make that one change, or after you do it once, it's like riding a bicycle. You know you can survive it. Mm-hmm. So you're no longer, it's like your training wheels come off and you're like, okay, I can handle this. Whatever is going to come my way, I can handle it.
Right, right. So if you were giving advice to someone else, what would be the number one key to embracing change?
In your opinion? For me, in my opinion, a very good friend of mine, she's also a former business partner of mine. I love the way she lives her life, like in terms of her approach to life. And she told me, take a pen, take some paper, and write down what you're actually afraid of. And when you write it down and you really look at it, a lot of times you see that you're really afraid of BS. Like, you're not really afraid of anything real.
Right.
And after I did that, it calmed me down a little bit, because I'm the type of person, I know I can focus. I know I can research. I know I can hustle. I know that I can figure things out. I'm not saying go quit your job next Thursday with no plan, you know.
Right.
but even sometimes after you make a plan, you still have anxiety and fears. But if you write your fears down and you look at them and you're like, what am I really afraid of? Sometimes you'll find you have nothing to write out. Or if you write one or two things out and you're looking at it, you can then formulate a plan to handle those fears, you
exactly.
know. So to me, that's the most valuable thing. Like, because our imagination could be our greatest asset or our greatest liability. And you don't want it to be your liability, coming up with all these fears and scenarios that 9 times out of 10 never happen.
Right. All these what ifs. What if I try it and this happens? Well, you know, what if you try it and it works out perfectly? Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Oh, but what if it does? And if it doesn't, so what? No great entrepreneur hit it out the park the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I met with an investor once for a company. And he's a huge CEO in the industry, huge. And he told me, you haven't failed yet. You have a great business plan, a great business model. Come back to me after you failed. And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, I don't invest in anybody that hasn't failed. Because once you fail and you come back, it says a lot about your fortitude. It says a lot about your resilience. And it says a lot about your problem solving skills. Until you failed, you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
So I guess that comes too with, take away the fear of failure. It's either failure is only a failure, so to speak, if you stay down and you don't learn nothing from it. You know,
you got it because that rebound is crucial. You have to be able to rebound, and not even just in business, in life, period. It's like life is going to deal you some blows. And that's why I like talking about the plot twist years, which, you know, are kind of like a cousin to the quarter life crisis, because, you know, a quarter life crisis, when people think about that, it's like this one moment in time. But in reality, a lot of stuff happens all the time.
Girl.
It just does.
Girl.
And it's like, how do you roll with it, you know?
And I tell my friends all the time, or I'll tell young ladies who I speak at a lot of different schools and functions, you're giving that ain't shit dude, excuse my French, beaucoup chances to figure it out. Why aren't you giving yourself chances to figure it out?
Yes.
You're gonna ride with him till the wheels fall off, and we all know that relationship ain't going nowhere. So why aren't you doing the same thing for yourself?
Yeah, like, give yourself some leniency. Yeah. 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 But sometimes,
you know?
I think we're really hard on ourselves. Some of us, because we have expectations of ourselves, and then we also have expectations that we think we're supposed to meet from people outside looking in too. So it's like everywhere you turn, there's all these pressures, whether you put the pressures on yourself or you feel like other people have these pressures that they've now placed on you. So it's hard for us to give ourselves like that room to just be and make mistakes and falter sometimes.
You know what, Ayana, like before I used to feel that way a lot, but when I stepped in front of camera 2 years ago, instead of now having, say, 10 core people I'm trying to please, my mama, my daddy, you know, my brother, even though they never put these pressures on me, these are things I put, you know, pressures I put on myself, you know, my core group of friends, you know, maybe a mentor or two. I now have X number of thousands of people looking at me. They leave comments about everything from the fact that I don't have hair to, oh, you're breaking out this month, to whatever the case may be. You shouldn't have asked that question. You talk too much, so on and so forth. You're never going to please everybody. And you damn sure can't please nobody who's not even happy with themselves. Because somebody who's happy with themselves would not take the time to criticize you in that way. They may critique you. They may try to give you something to help you. But there's a difference between me saying, hey, girl, why don't you try doing A instead of B, versus be like, you ain't that bright. You should have done B. You know what I'm saying? There's a difference. So someone who's really happy with themselves and really wants to put forth good vibes and see other people win is not going to come at you like that. So I learned, I'd say that's one of my biggest lessons in the last 2 years, is that you can't please everybody. But if Dana Blair can sleep with Dana Blair at night and knows that she's done her best and has tried to treat people respectfully and fairly and treat herself respectfully and fairly, that's all that she can do.
Right. Right.
That's all.
Preach. That is the word.
It just came out. That's all right. You can do.
That's all you can do, baby girl. Yes. As you mentioned, you were on air talent for Essence.com Live for 2 years. How did you break the news to the Essence team that you made this decision to do the remote year program?
Well, I didn't even tell them that it was a program that I was doing because for me, I wasn't even sure, and I'm still kind of unsure as to how far I'm going to be able to go in the program because I have other opportunities that I'm working on and that sort of thing, you know. I believe in having multiple pots on the stove at the same time, you know, and
oiling,
keep,
baby.
Keep everything cooking. Yeah. So even now, if I get my dream job phone call in the next 20 minutes, I'm not going, you know. But I applied to the program back in August and I applied for so the remote year in each class, if you will, in each group is 75 people. So you're never traveling with more than 75 professionals from various backgrounds, countries. So it's not just United States folks, ages and that sort of thing. You're all from different professional backgrounds, et cetera. So, and that was to leave January 1. I found out I got accepted in the end of September because it's a 3-round application process. And I thought about it and I sat on, I had even paid my deposit and I sat on it and I was like, God, am I really supposed to do this? And so I'd say for about a good solid 4 months, I thought about it. And then I genuinely like, really made my mind up the week of Christmas. Like, yeah, you really gonna do it. And then when I came back, And like, I don't know anybody's faith and in how they feel spiritually, and I don't care what God you pray to, but the universe puts something in you sometimes. And and it just said, okay, no, you have to go. Now you have to go. And I had started ordering my life and not really realizing it. Like, I sold everything, all my furniture, and started selling my clothes on Poshmark back in like August. I moved out of my apartment in September. And I stayed at a friend brownstone until like, you know, 2 weeks ago.
so it was, so it was working. Things were working.
Yeah. So I was doing things and I wasn't really sure why, but I just felt like I had to do it. And when I started to put it out there, the universe was responding. Like, I broke my lease 5 months in advance. That don't happen in New York.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the New York real estate game, anybody who's lived in New York City, any of the five boroughs, you know, it is crucial.
Yeah. So, they want their money.
They want their money. Like, I literally was like, I'm trying to break my lease, trying to break my lease on September 28th. And I remember everything like, cause I'm crazy like that. At 7 PM, I got an email from management saying, we'll let you break your lease if you're out by the end of the month at 5 PM. If you realize, September 30th is 2 days later and 5 p.m. So less than 48 hours. I called my homegirl. I was like, yo, they said I can do X, Y, and Z. She said, hold tight. She found some Jamaicans in the Bronx, got a band, and made it happen. Like, seriously, like, my network pulled together.
Yes, that's what friends are for.
Exactly. And all of a sudden people were like, oh, I want to buy this. Oh, I want your sofa. Oh, I want your TV. Oh, I want this. Boom, boom, boom. Oh, your wine glasses. Oh, you're this. And it was just like, I'm like, come get it. Be here before 5 p.m. on Friday. I am playing. And it just, it worked out. It worked.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. And that's because it was supposed, no, but it was supposed to work. I'm a big believer that if things are supposed to work, they will work out. It will almost be, and I don't want to say effortless because it's not like you didn't have to take the time and the effort to move and, you know, get rid of all your stuff, but it worked out because it was supposed to work out. And I mean, I'm definitely familiar with that whole process, honey. I went through like, I had a little bit more time on my hands, but I went through 3 weeks of stoop sales is what I call them. Just selling everything in my apartment. And it was crazy. My network came through as well. My friends were out there helping me sell stuff, collecting money, you know, and you know, the craziest thing that sold, like, you couldn't even, I couldn't even put them out on the sidewalk fast enough, mirrors.
Yep. Like, and it's things that you don't even think about. It's things that you don't even think about. And I'm going to tell you something that I've never told anybody. I have never mentioned this to anybody. And if my homegirl who showed up with the Jamaicans knew this, she'd probably shoot me. I was so calm during that day and that process. Mm-hmm. I went to bed that night and I said, wow, this is your last night in this apartment. And you really like this apartment. I prayed on it. I woke up. I broke down my bed by myself. Felt like She-Ra. I painted my nails. In the middle of the day, I painted my nails. I felt that calm and at peace with what was happening.
Yes. Yes. That speaks volumes right there. Yeah. Yeah.
I painted my nails. And they were a lovely red. Fire engine. Yes.
Yeah, red of all colors. It was, like you said, you were feeling that whole woman hear me roar, She-Ra. Paint them red, honey. Let's go. We are doing this. Yes, change is coming. Right, right. And she probably was like, her nails look fresh. Side eye. I'm not going to say anything, though.
I know, right? I ain't going to say nothing, though. I ain't going to say nothing.
Right, 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 right. So what was the pull in making you sort of like decide that this type of lifestyle change might have been what you needed?
I've always been very in touch with myself. Now, as I've gotten older, I've trusted myself. When I was younger, I didn't trust myself, and then I'd end up beating myself up later because I'd be like, Dana, you knew better. Whether that was a job, whether that was a boyfriend, a friendship, you knew better. Your gut told me that that heifer was grimy from jump, you know? Like, but now that I'm older, I trust myself. And I've never even signed a lease on an apartment if I couldn't visualize myself being there. Mm-hmm. And it was just something in my spirit that just told me, you don't belong here no more. I've been in New York 16 years. I lived in New York almost as long as I lived in Alexandria, Louisiana. I left Alexandria when I was 18. Mm-hmm. Like, just something said, this is not for you anymore, baby girl. It's time for you to go. Now, it's up to you to figure out where that go is, but this is coming to an end. This chapter is coming to an end. Doesn't mean it's going to close forever, but right now it's coming to an end. And I had to listen to that. Yeah. I had to listen to that.
So do you feel like your time in New York is coming to an end, too, just like as a place and a destination for you? Do you foresee yourself revisiting New York?
I mean, yeah. In a perfect world, I'm bi-coastal between L.A. and New York. But okay. I moved out of New York a week ago, and I don't have any intention of going back for a long time unless work brings me there. I'm in New Orleans right now because I just ran the marathon for team. I've never been that girl. I'm spending some time with my family before I head out. Mm-hmm. It, just for now, that chapter is closed in my life. I'm not saying I'll probably be back in New York. I've already committed to running the New York City Marathon this year, so I'm sure I'll be in New York in November. You know, it's just not home right now.
Yeah,
that's all.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's so many ties to New York because you lived there so long. It's not like it's going to be a place that you'll avoid, and that you're always going to have connections there. So that makes sense.
Oh yeah, my second family is there. My best, like, I've made some amazing friends who become family there. Mm-hmm. So I always have a tie there. Always.
Right. Right. So what countries will you be traveling to on the upcoming year's remote year?
So each remote year group has a different itinerary. My itinerary is 4 months in Southeast Asia, 4 months in Europe, 4 months in South America. So it's Malaysia, Vietnam, Cambodia, Thailand, Portugal, Belgrade, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, Argentina, Chile, Peru. I think I'm missing one other. Yeah. So but other groups are going to Colombia and Mexico, and it just depends. No two groups have like the same itinerary. They may do the same cities, but you're not going to do it at the same time, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of situation. Some don't even go to Southeast Asia. Some do 6 months Europe, 6 months South America, like, or Central America. It just depends. Yeah.
Do you have any type of say-so or request that you put in when they're selecting where you go?
No. When I signed up, originally I was supposed to leave January 1, and then I ended up bumping it back to leave in the next class. And they said, well, if you leave in the next class, then the itinerary is different, you know? So they were just kind of, they were flexible in that way, but I don't get to pick and choose which cities, so to speak.
Okay.
Because they're very well organized. Like, they have group leaders and that sort of thing. There's lots of, it's very organized. There's lots of, planned activities. There's a lot of business resources, different things like that, that you can tap into and access. There's always a remote year personnel and staff with each group. So you're not just out there willy nilly kind of thing.
Yeah. So you've been sort of like documenting this journey loosely on your social media on Instagram in this transition. Mm-hmm. And you posted a picture of yourself getting, was it a new tattoo? Is that what we saw?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so what did you get and what was the meaning behind it, if you'll share with us?
Yeah. On my left arm and the inside at the top, I got an apple just to kind of commemorate my 16 years of being in New York City and leaving New York City, the Big Apple. So I got an apple. Every tattoo in my body has meaning. And for me, that was, I was like, I need to mark, I just wanted to mark that moment. So I have a little apple. She cute.
Yeah, that makes absolute sense. I love it. So I know we've talked about like fear and whatnot, but did you have any fear in making this decision?
Yeah. You know, yeah. It's scary to step outside of your comfort zone. I've talked to some of my closest friends about it. Like, I'm not a 22-year-old fresh face out just out of college tenderoni who's naive as to what can happen in the world. I'm 35 and I'm leaving a really good job in a career that I know I'm going to be on television for. I know I want to be an on-air host and correspondent, you know. Mm-hmm. I have adult responsibilities, you know. Yeah. So it's harder to me to make those changes. I feel like I'd have been more fearless or less fearful, however you want to put it, at 22 than I am now. Mm-hmm. But I would not have the toolbox mm-hmm. at 22 that I do now either. I don't think I would have been emotionally mature enough to really, really embrace the experience then. So it's kind of like six in one, half a dozen in the other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's and also, you know, having this significant experience with living in New York for all these number of years, that also sets you up for the next phase in life, whatever that's going to be, because that's an experience in itself that just prepares you, I feel like, almost for anything. You know, you think it's a cliche when they say like, oh, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere, but I really believe that to be true now. I really do.
I completely agree.
Yeah, it's like if you can handle New York, you can handle anything. I didn't do the remote year, but I had a similar experience where I left everything and went and traveled and lived abroad for 4 months. And we'll talk about that on another episode. But I found myself in Madrid where I felt like by myself, and I felt like mm-hmm. English was just not the number one. Like I would be like, right. Do you speak English? And they'd be like, no.
No, they don't.
Yeah, it wasn't like a go-to. And so I was there by myself. I didn't speak Spanish. And somehow I managed to navigate my stay there completely on public transportation. And like I said, all by myself. And when I look back on it, I was like, how did I do that? And I was thinking, it's New York. It's New York. Mm-hmm. It's because if you can make it in New York, yeah, you figure it out, right? Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah, you do what you have to do.
And traveling does that too, though. Traveling, like you said, when you don't speak the language, traveling makes you resourceful too. Like, figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Pull it together, figure it out.
Right. Yeah, that's just, you just have no choice because it's like that sink or swim. It's like, what are you going to do? Yes, this is not your comfort zone, but okay, so what are you going to do, cry about it? No, that's not going to help. That might get you killed in 48 hours. So you might want to figure it out.
Figure it out.
So out of all of the places that you've traveled to thus far, because you're a traveler, like, let's not act like this remote year situation, if for those that don't know, Dana, this is not just like the person who's never gone anywhere, no stamps in her passport, deciding that she's just going to embark on a year of travel. Now, if that is you, I'm not saying that you can't do that, but Dana is a traveler. So for you, Dana, what has been one of your, like your most enjoyable or maybe like your favorite vacation destination or experience that you've had up until now?
Oh, favorite?
Yeah. Or like one that really sticks out in your mind, because I don't even know why I asked that question, because I hate when people ask me about favorites. I'm like, I don't have a favorite. I like a lot of stuff. But, you know, something that really sticks out in your mind, like, that was a really, really cool experience, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat if I could. One of those types of trips.
Yeah. In January of 2015, I took a trip that it meant a lot to me, because I was just in an interesting space in my life. I was coming out of an unhealthy relationship, and I met a friend of mine in Iceland, and then I was there for a few days, and then she came to the United States when I went, and then I went on to London, and then I was in London for a little bit, and then I went on to Madrid, and then I was in Madrid for a little bit, and then I went to Sevilla, because I always wanted to go to Andalusia, south of Spain, because of The Alchemist, which is one of my favorite books. So, and I took the train there and all kinds of stuff. So for me, that was really a big trip, because I also wrote every day during that trip. And I came back, I genuinely came back a better person. And by better, I mean more kind to Dana, more in touch with what I wanted. And I had healed some. I was gone about 2 weeks. So that for me was a really iconic trip. That I would do again in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I love it. Those are the best trips too, when you're just in a place where you're ready to just be open and explore, and you just kind of let yourself go. And the writing element, I'm sure that had a lot to do with why you came back feeling like a new woman.
No, definitely. And I believe in writing your feelings down, writing your thoughts down. Some people think it's cliche or whatever, but I think it can be quite cathartic.
Yeah, it helps you sort through things sometimes too. I haven't been like keeping a journal or anything like that, but more and more lately, it keeps popping up in different places. And so I'm thinking now, I'm like, maybe I should start journaling some of what's going on in my life right now, because sometimes when you look back on things, it's easy to forget the ins and outs of things. So I think a journal could be a really good way to just kind of keep you mindful of everything that you've gone through to get you where you are at the present moment, you know?
What I love to do, and this might be because I'm kind of crazy and weird, I love to look back a year prior. So today's what, you know, if pick a day, like if it's December 30th, which is my birthday, I like to look back in my journal and see where I was a year prior. Because it also reminds me how much can happen in a year, how much can happen in a small amount of time, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So would you say, have you figured out your why? And if so, would you mind sharing it with us?
My why as in for like living or
for,
like my why?
Yeah, like for... So that would be a good one like, too. But they could overlap, because it's more so like your why for living, your day to day. Because a lot of times we go through life and we're just going. We're checking the boxes. We're just doing what we feel like we're supposed to do or what comes next. And we don't take the time to really take inventory and really sit with ourselves and understand, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? And what is my why? Like, what drives me? So more of your why in that capacity?
My why is to connect with people. I think God put me on this earth to connect with people. When you connect with somebody and you show them that I see you, or I'm hearing you, or I want to help you, it can change their whole world. And some people think that's cliche or whatever, but we are all connected in some capacity. Some people you don't want to connect with. Some people you're like, you're just not nice. I don't want to connect with you. But all in all, I think that's what I'm here to do, you know, hosting and interviewing people. You're connecting with someone and you're trying to get some sort of piece of information out of them to help somebody who you never met, who's watching you from their home or their office connect, you know. I like speaking to young ladies because I want them to connect with me. I want them to see that your situation, wherever you are, isn't going to last always. It gets better. You can reach for your dreams. I want to start something I've always wanted to do, and a big goal for me is to start programs in rural towns and in small towns like mine around the country, where people don't have access to the arts, or they don't have access to, like, when I came to New York, I was flabbergasted by the amount of my friends who were born and raised in New York who never went to Broadway.
Wow, yeah.
Never even left their borough. Like, you, for $2 mm-hmm. and 25 cents, you could, or at the time, I don't know what the hell it is now.
Yeah, I think it's going up to $3, but yeah.
Okay, you could swipe your card and you can be in the center of everything. Do you know what I would have killed for to have that opportunity in Alexandria? You mm-hmm. know what I mean? To see another Black dancer, to mm-hmm. like, all of those things. So, in a lot of these smaller towns, you have kids who are really good artists whose parents are telling them, you can't do that. You better go get you a 9-to-5.
Yeah.
Who don't know about DreamWorks, don't know about Disney, don't know about graphic design.
That's not even a reality.
Exactly. So I would love to start programs in small towns and bring in some of my connections that I've made over the years and have them just expose these kids that the world is so much bigger. And you don't have to leave your mm-hmm. town. You can do freelance from your house if you want to. You know, if you don't want to, yeah. you know, I'm not saying you have to move across the country from your mom and daddy like I did. So that to me is, I want people to be, I genuinely want people to be happy. I mm-hmm. genuinely do. But I've also had to recognize not everybody wants to be happy.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of it too. Yeah, because it's like you can't want something for someone more than they want it for themselves. So when you recognize that, you do what you can and then you keep it moving. Unfortunately.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah.
And it is what it is. And it's okay. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make you good or bad. It just means mm-hmm. we can't be here right now. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I look forward to a program like that. I mean, I'd love to really see that happen because I know that there's a lot of talent in a lot of these small and rural towns where the exposure to the opportunity mm-hmm. is just not there. So sometimes
right.
there's people that grow up and live in small towns and stay there because that's the norm. But this immense amount of talent that they have will never be experienced by the world because they don't even know how to get it out to the world. But
exactly.
The good thing that I like about social media and the time that we're living in right now is it makes things a little bit more accessible. And if you even have the slightest bit of drive in yourself and or curiosity, you might be mm-hmm. able to give yourself away in a chance to do some things that hadn't been done or hadn't even been thought of by your peers around you because you can see what other people are doing online or whatever, and it might make you think, maybe I can do that too. Maybe I can try that too. So that's the good thing about the times we're living in right now.
That is true. That is very, very true.
So when you think of success, or, you know, when you hear that word success, what does it mean or look like for you personally? Because it's different for everyone, but what do you feel like success feels like and looks like for you?
Success for me is having a loving partner to share my journey with. I would like to be a mom one day, so a healthy child. My family's healthy and we're able to come together, you know, my brother and my nieces and that mm-hmm. sort of thing. That's what success is to me. Like, I don't need the biggest diamonds in the world. I don't need, because in the grand scheme of things, I don't mean shit. Like, in the grand mm-hmm. scheme of things, if, you know, if I got cancer, if, God forbid, someone passes away or we can't eat, that doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
You know, it's about people and relationships in those moments. So I work hard because I want to be comfortable and I want to be able to do things for other people, not mm-hmm. because I need things. Like, selling all my stuff, there was a time I wouldn't have been able to imagine doing that. Now it's like, whatever, just a jacket anyway. You know what I mean? Like,
mm-hmm.
It's just a different perspective.
The attachment is not there.
There's no attachment there, you know? And for me, I don't want to work hard and come home and not have anybody to share it with. So mm-hmm. I want to be able to build with someone and create something with someone in a deeper, loving, meaningful way and do things for my family and people I love and, you know, help send other children to school. And you want to go to a dance camp? Okay, cool. You got some talent? Oh, I see you. Okay, boom. I'll write that check. You know, like that to me is success.
That's awesome. I love it. It's about the feelings. And it's about the human connection versus the consumption and, you know, the accumulation of things. A lot of people, their first, you know, inclination when they hear success is like, oh, I've made X amount of money and I've done, you know, X, Y, Z, and my name is on this billboard and whatever. But, you know, is that fulfilling? Because,
and you know what, for some people it is. For some people it is. I'm just not one of them people.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what?
You know?
The more that I grow and learn and live, I realize that even for the people that think that that's fulfilling or say that that's fulfilling for them, it is either temporary or it's what they're telling themselves, because it's living for that expectation of what other people think success should mean for them. Because I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that we've, you know, experienced and watched that have had this, what we would consider to be like major success, and they're crumbling and unhappy behind closed doors.
You know what? People ask me all the time, they can't believe I don't have a boyfriend. You ain't got no man and this and that, right? And you meet all these celebrities and you meet all these stars. And I said, oh, that's great, and I don't care. And yes, I've had some fun with some people. But if my tire goes flat in the middle of the night and you're not going to come pick me up, then there's nothing meaningful there. If my father's in the hospital and you're not going to get on a plane with me and come to New Orleans, what are we talking about? You know what I'm saying?
You need depth.
When I was 16 years old, my mom suffered a brain aneurysm. It was very sudden. My parents had been divorced for 3 months. My parents were married for 23 years. They had been divorced for 3 months when my mom, her aneurysm began to leak. And literally within a matter of 24 hours, she didn't know who I was. My brother was in college at the time. He was away doing an internship, so he had to fly into town. And they didn't think my mother was going to make it. So it was a Friday morning, and they were about to wheel my mom into surgery. And the neurologist said, you know, Miles, that's my brother, Dana, looked at my father, and my father's a judge. He said, Judge, y'all can take a few moments and go speak with her. Basically, say goodbye to your mother.
Yeah.
This could be the last time you speak to your mom.
So
we're all back there. We're all back there, and we're holding hands. And that's the first time I saw my parents hold hands in a very long time. And my father's a judge. My mother was an entrepreneur, owned her own business. And my dad, we're holding hands, and we said a prayer. And my father looked at us and said, Miles, Dana, I want you to remember something. In times like this, the house, the cars, the vacations, the clothes, the things mean nothing. The only thing that matters is the people in this room. We are a family. And I will never forget that. And that is what's important to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't worship things. I appreciate them. I enjoy a good wine. I enjoy a good meal, you know. But I don't worship things because they don't mean anything. When the shit hits the fan, excuse the terminology, who's to my left and my right? You know what I'm saying? So I learned that lesson at a young age. Fortunately, my mother lived. She's healthy, alive, and telling me what to do every day in my life. But,
yeah, she's a beautiful woman. Yes, yes, yes. I met her at your New York event. Yes,
that's right. So and she's telling me everything every day. Girl, you need to do this. But I learned that lesson at a very young age.
And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, it's like, fortunately for most people, they don't experience that type of situation. But the good in that is that you still have your mother, and you are able to see the value of family and what really matters when it comes down to it. Because a lot of people, that's when they make like huge life decisions and things, when stuff kind of goes like totally like they didn't expect. And there may be some, you know, very, very trying times, whether it be losing a job, losing a loved one, all of these things that can potentially happen in life. And then that's when, you know, certain things click, like, hey, all of this stuff that I put all this importance on, it doesn't really matter like that. And sometimes it's good when you realize that somebody doesn't have to go through all of that to figure it out, because you don't want to be, you know, you don't want to go through those dramatic times. You know, it's always better if you can really come to that kind of conclusion and figure those things out without having those huge monumental life events happen. So I try to tell people that too. It's like when people are like, oh, how do you, you know, live so simple, and how do you do this, and how did you sell all of your stuff and move and this and that? I didn't go through anything dramatic in terms of somebody else with someone else outside of myself, you know, in my life, but it was enough going on in my life and in my head and in my space and in my mind that I knew that simplifying was fine for me, and my happiness was more than just collecting this paycheck from a job that everyone else envied. I knew it, you know, because that wasn't working for me. So sometimes you have to allow things to just kind of take shape in your life so that you can see, all right, maybe this stuff that I'm putting importance on, it doesn't really matter, because I want to live my best life. And maybe it has nothing to do with the fact that I have I have 10 Gucci bags and this and that or whatever. You know, it's about experiences, love, all of that stuff. Yeah.
And it's, absolutely. And then again, it's no dis. People take offense to that if they are the 10 Gucci bag girl. Like,
yeah,
if you're trying to say that to me. No.
Yeah. I mean, no offense.
Yeah. It's like, but they take offense to that. If you're like, no, I'm just saying what fulfills you and what fulfills me are different things.
Right.
And you can go on and have that. I am somewhere else. Because then the fact of the matter is, it's always going to be a new bag and a new season and a new something that you're looking for. So, people get really offended by that. I also learned that people get offended when you're like, no, you can't come with me. Mm-hmm. You know, our friendships run its course. Mm-hmm. People get offended by that. But the fact of the matter is, we stopped speaking months ago. Like, why are you mad?
Yeah.
Just because I said it? You know what I'm saying?
Right. So do you think that there's a direct correlation between making changes in your professional life and your personal life?
Yes. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. Because I think not so much making changes in your personal life affecting your professional, not as much. I'm sure there are some scenarios, but I think when you make changes in your professional life, and I talk about this on the second video on my blog for the site.
Real quick, the site is ihavenevermetthatgirl.com. Go check it out. See what video she's talking about. All right, continue.
Yeah, I talk about that. The second video is called, it says, "Your Attitude Is Not My Problem." Mm-hmm. And I talk about that, where people felt genuinely like me making changes in my career was affecting them. I'm not married. I don't have any babies. I have zero dependents I claim on my taxes. How is that affecting you? You know what I mean? I mentioned briefly, you know, when you and I spoke offline, there was a woman who, she's pretty well known in the industry, and she's a cool chick. I've met her one time about 5 months ago, and we followed each other on social media. Really, really sweet girl. She genuinely came at me and was like, "Why didn't you tell me you were leaving your job?" I was like, I just kind of chuckled. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I met you one time 5 months ago.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, the conversation went on to the point where what seemed at first like a joke made me realize, no, I think she's kind of serious.
Yeah. She was invested in your moves. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's invested in my move. Or people kept asking me, well, where are you going? Where are you going? I don't have a job. They get even more offended. What do you mean you don't have a job?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you going to do? Well, do you think that's smart? Well, do you da 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 da? Well, unless I'm on your couch and asking you to pay my bills, how is that affecting you?
Yeah.
You know, and I genuinely had to tell people when they were like, well, where are you going? And I said, I don't know. And they would look at me and I had to say, no, I'm not being a jerk. I genuinely don't know.
As soon as I figure it out, okay, you'll be the first to get the memo. People are uncomfortable with that. Yeah, I think they're uncomfortable with it because we're trained and taught to be uncomfortable with that. We're trained to seek, you know, stability. A lot of us are, let's say. We're trained to seek stability. We're trained to seek routine and things like that. So when you come up and say, hey, I'm switching up the whole game, I'm switching up the program, then it's like, wait, what? And a part of it could be, and they might not have admitted it to themselves yet, but a part of it could be that they're envious. They're thinking, how is she doing this? Because I know I had a friend, when I came back from London, I was at a friend's house and she was having like a gathering. It was a bunch of us. And she was telling me how people had been asking her, how is Ayana doing this? She quit. So, and they were trying to understand through talking to her. They're like, so she quit her job. She moved to London. How is she affording all of this? How is she doing this? And you know what her answer was? She's like, I'm not really sure. You have to talk to her about that, but I'm imagining that she planned for this. That's what I can tell you. And it's because most people don't really think ahead like that, and they can't see themselves planning for big major moves like this, that they're shocked when you say something like, I quit my job at Essence to do this remote year program and then figure out what's next. Because I don't know what's next, but I'm open, and
I have people say, well, oh, I would do that, but I can't because I'm married with kids. Oh, okay. First of all, but in their tone, it's almost like they're shaming me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, I ain't telling you to marry your husband, so okay. Like,
that's your problem. Sorry. I'll have fun for you.
Girl, and it's like half the time you don't really like your husband, no way. So stop. Like, I don't understand. But again, it takes a certain level of security with me and myself to be able to feel that way. Because there was a time where that one comment could have ruined the rest of my day and made me feel bad, and I'd have had to call two or three of my girlfriends, and I'd have had to really think about that. You know what I'm saying? And fact of the matter is, there are people changing their lives every day. They just order their steps and then have the nerve to jump. That's it. You know, people with much harder circumstances and different challenges than me who are changing the game and changing their lives every day. We just don't know about them, you know, which is another reason why I started. I've never been that girl. I wanted to share more stories of women. But like, to me, I'm not doing anything revolutionary. You know what I'm saying? There are, let's see, I want to say Remote Year has been around for about 3 years. They have 75 people per class. I believe there's like 4 classes a year. Like, if you do the math, that's several hundred people already who've done this.
Yeah.
That you don't know about. You know what I mean?
And there's countless that probably still want to do it and are thinking about and wishing that they could do it that you don't know about, who haven't made the cut with the program.
Or people who've done it on their own without going through a program. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But the fact of the matter is that what you choose for your life has nothing to do with what I choose for my life.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing to do with it. And my birthday is December 30th. So it's always great to have a birthday, I feel, at the end of the year, because you can make resolutions and resolve certain issues and not carry it into your new year. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who are really hurt. People, I mean, some friends, dudes I dated, like not even my boyfriend, like we may have gone to dinner a few times, who were offended that I'm like, no, you can't come into 2017 with me. And another, I'm like, why are you offended? I haven't talked to you in months.
Right.
You just happened to pick up the phone or shoot me a text message because my birthday is December 30th. But if my birthday would have never came around and you wouldn't have seen it on social media, you still wouldn't have hollered at me. So why are you offended when I'm like, oh, who is this? Why are you mad?
Why are you mad, son?
Why are you mad, son? Do you know what I mean? And again, people are offended, but why are you offended? I haven't talked to you in forever.
Yeah.
We don't have that kind of relationship. We don't even send text messages. So I don't understand what's the problem now.
Right.
You have to
do what's best for you. Yeah. And you know what? Most of these people are out there doing, especially the men, they're out there doing what's best for them and expecting that you'll be sitting around somewhere waiting to be a part of the equation. But it's like, no, actually, I'm out here doing what's best for me. And what's best for me right now is some major life changes, and I'm cool with it. Ciao. You know?
And another thing. social media is the devil sometimes, I'm going to tell you, because mm-hmm. they're able to, what I discovered, and this is actually my next video installment, it's called It's Raining Men. It's called It's Raining Men. Once I posted that I quit my job and that my life is on this trajectory, mm-hmm. I started hearing from dudes out the woodwork, getting text messages, DMs, mm-hmm. where are you going? Well, I need to see you one last time. You ain't need to see me too much.
Exactly. Stop it,
sir. You know, like,
sir.
All these other things. It's like, what the hell? What are you talking about? And mm-hmm. furthermore, it's like, I wasn't tracking you down, but why are you, like, it's just insane. So social media allows people to keep tabs on you from a distance. And right. it's like, when something seems a little too much, they're either mm-hmm. going to hold on real, real tight or let go.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, be prepared because as things continue on, you're going to get the messages that say, I'm so proud of you. I remember when we talked about XYZ and you're just really, you're going to be like,
girl.
Okay. Because I'm just like, side eye. What?
No, I got a message from a dude who I dated literally 8 years ago. I'm so proud of you. You always said you wanted to run a marathon. I was like, first of all, I don't remember ever saying that shit. Second of all, it wasn't just like one message. It wasn't a comment on a public post. You're sending me a text message and multiple messages back to back to back. Mm. To the point where if I were your wife, side eye, swoops, bang, I wouldn't be comfortable with you sending your ex these inspirational messages.
No, okay? How proud you are of her. Yeah, no, thank you. No.
No, I would not be comfortable with that. I would not be comfortable with that.
No. Cool. But you know what I think that is? I think that is, it's a certain amount of belonging or a place that people feel like they want to play, and a role that they want to play, and a place that they have in your life when they feel like you're doing things that are beyond them. That's a mm-hmm. like a common thing that I've noticed since switching everything up in my life. I noticed that people feel like they want to play a role in your life and they want to be able to say, I knew her when, and things like that. So I just observe, you know, because I think it's just what people do. I don't know why.
But it's their ego. It's their ego. That has nothing to do with you.
That's what it is.
Sometimes it's about accessibility. Sometimes it's about still feeling like I can pull that girl. Sometimes it's what does it say about me to have not reached a certain level or a certain space in my life? A lot of times it has nothing to do with you because that person genuinely cared about you. The relationship would have always existed. There's guys that I've dated back in like 10, 15 years ago. To be honest with you, who over the years we've stayed in touch, an email here, an email there. I heard about your mom. Congratulations on the da-da-da, ba-da-da-da. And that's different.
Right.
If you never took the time to make sure to maintain a relationship, it's not going to automatically switch overnight just because you decide that this relationship needs to change because you see me changing. And that applies to men. That applies to colleagues. That applies to your closest girlfriends. That even applies to family members.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people were not checking for me until Erykah Badu sat on my lap in an interview, until I interviewed mm-hmm. Patti LaBelle, until mm-hmm. I was in an OWN documentary. A lot of y'all were not checking for me. A lot of y'all had opinions about who I was and had never even held a conversation with me. So I'm clear on that. But again, mm-hmm. I identify what's my baggage, and I can only deal with my shit, mm-hmm. and then you can own yours. And you can have yours, and then I just move accordingly in the space.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You just move as the dynamic woman that you are. You just keep it going. Keep it moving. Keep it moving.
Yeah, let them know.
And so you're fresh off of a marathon run, too. Like, speaking of marathons, you ran the New York City Marathon, right?
I ran New York City in November 2015, and then mm-hmm. I ran this February, a couple weeks ago, or a week ago.
Yeah.
Damn, not even a week ago at this point, in New Orleans.
How did you get into marathon running? And I know you ran on behalf of I Have Never Been That Girl, and you raised money for She's the First. Tell us how you got into marathon running, because that in itself is a testament to discipline and just the type of woman that you are, because not everybody can get out there and say, I'm going to run a marathon and actually do it.
Girl, running a marathon was something that was always on my bucket list, but I never thought I was really going to do. You know what I mean? You're like, yeah, girl, I want to do that before I die. But in the back of your head, you're like, I ain't ever really going for that. But a friend of mine, Ursula Stevens, she is very good friends with one of the founders or the co-founder of Pitchin Foundation, Amber Sabathia. And Amber, she every year the foundation has a team run the New York City Marathon, and she recruited Ursula, and then she told Ursula, she's like, I think you'll stick with it and with the training if you recruit somebody to do it with you. And so one day literally Ursula called me and was like, so you want to run a marathon? I was like, girl, out of here. You're so crazy. And then I was like, sure, I'll do it. And then I was like, wait a minute, what did I just sign up to do?
What did I just say yes to?
I never ran. Like, I was not a runner at all. So that first time I walked, I was like, let me hit a Prospect Park real quick in Brooklyn. Let me see if I could hit bang this mile out real quick. No, ma'am. Please stop. No.
Huffing, puffing.
I realized, what the hell did I just sign up to do? I already been signed the paper. What did I do? But it was one of the most rewarding experiences of my life. So I've never been that girl, and doing it in New Orleans. And she's the first, like, there's just so many reasons why it just made sense to do. And we've raised almost $10,000. We're still fundraising, but we're just shy of hitting a $10,000 goal.
Yay.
And, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I'm super excited about it. And there were only six of us that ran. So it doesn't take 50 people to have a big impact, you know. You can do a lot if it's about your heart and that sort of thing. So, so I guess I got bit by a run bug.
That's good. But hey, that's a good thing, because it keeps you fit and active and out there and on your toes. It's good. We love it. So we know you're always up to something, and I feel like there has to be something good cooking with this whole traveling abroad for a year. So will you be working while you're away, and what kind of, can you share what kind of things you're planning to work on while you're away?
I'm looking for different opportunities to do like some vlogging and editorial content and kind of continue to document and grow this experience. I also have a marketing background. So it's kind of like a mixture of things that I'm working on at this time. I haven't even fully figured it out. Just planting seeds and figuring it out. And I wish I had something more concrete to share with you.
No, I mean, look, this is the space you're in. What we'll need to do is just continue to watch your journey as it unfolds and see what greatness you come up with. That's what we'll do. That just makes us tune in.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yes. So what's one thing that lets you know that you're living your life on your terms and you're living a life according to her?
That I can sleep at night. I know me. When I'm doing something that's not right, I don't sleep at all. Wow. When something's not right or in order in my life, I don't sleep. And I don't eat either. Like some people stress eat, I don't eat. So if I'm not sleeping, I have to check myself. I have to check myself heavy.
Figure out what's going on.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then the universe always, you know, God is good all the time. And God always comes through in the clutch with a solution that I never saw happening. Mm-hmm. And I know if I wasn't supposed to have something or do something, God would not make it possible. I, not too long ago, after I had resigned, literally, I resigned on a Monday. That Thursday, I had a job offer and a job offer on a place I didn't see coming. And I never really shared this. Only my close friends know this, but like I accepted, and I, as soon as I accepted, I cried the rest of the night. I cried so hard. My best friend Tiffany had picked me up from an event that I was at. And as soon as I got in her car, I like fell apart. And then she brought me home. I cried so hard. I cried myself to sleep, literally with my head in her lap. And the next day I said, I can't do this job. I'm so sorry. I apologize for whatever I may have put anyone through, blah, blah, blah. But this is not the right fit for me. And so for me, like I was saying earlier, listening to my gut and that voice on the inside is a mighty powerful thing. Because for me, in my opinion, and you know, I'm not sure about anybody else's faith or spirituality or whatever, and that's on them, God lives within all of us. And that voice that's speaking to us, our consciousness anger, is to me, comes from a deeper place. And we don't always understand why we feel that way. You know, like, girl, don't you get in the car with those kids, or don't you go to that house party, or you know what I mean? Or don't you take that from your mama's wallet, or you don't understand why you feel those ways sometimes. You know, you're on an elevator with somebody and you're uncomfortable and you just get off on the next floor, even though that's not your floor. Like, you don't understand where it comes from, but you know. And so to me, that's God, you know, that's something bigger than you trying to speak to you. So I for me, to live a life that's honest to Dana and to live a life according to her is to live a life that I'm listening to not just outside voices and things, but really genuinely trying to listen to me. And when something's not right, the same thing with accepting that job, I immediately know I'm not sleeping, I'm upset, I'm not eating, and I know something's wrong.
That's so important. Paying attention to you. And I think that right there, if you don't take anything else away from this interview, you need to listen to that. Pay attention to yourself. Pay attention to that intuition. Spend time with yourself. And on that note, I want to thank you so much, Dana, for spending time with us, sharing your story with us. We're so excited about this journey that we're going to follow you on. So you guys can all keep up with Dana on what I'm sure will be a can't miss year of exploration and growth on her Instagram at just Dana Blair, and visit her website as well. IHaveNeverBeenThatGirl.com for more stories on inspiring women. And thank you so much for spending time with us, Dana.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'll be stalking you via social and email as well.
Yes. Ditto. Ditto.
If you've made it this far and you like what you've heard, share if you care. That was corny, right? But anyway, I'd be super grateful on the real if you'd subscribe on iTunes and if you'd rate us. Definitely would also appreciate you telling a friend. Thanks for hanging out with us, and as always, keep killing it.